Hey everybody, this is Derek Johansson. Let me do a quick introduction for this interview. You're about to listen to Ian Stanley. Ian is probably not somebody you've heard of before, but his story is pretty incredible, and his experiences as a copywriter are something most can really only dream about. For the past 18 months, he's been working as a copywriter for a large direct response company, where he's been writing copy for an email list of over 1.2 million subscribers, and very recently he became the head copywriter for another direct response company, doing in the high seven figures, if not eight figures by now. Ian can now call himself a six-figure copywriter as well, so that's pretty cool. In this interview, you're going to get some great insight into how Ian approaches copy for the mass market. You'll get to listen to his entire process for writing copy, and you're going to get a glimpse of his daily schedule. This is some really good, I guess, insider information, I guess you could call it, that Ian was able to share with us, which is really nice and really generous of him. So I hope you enjoy this talk as much as I did. There is some profanity in here. There's some use of the F word and the S word and, you know, words along those lines. So if you're not really comfortable with that kind of language, then this might not be for you. But if you want to get an inside glimpse into somebody, you know, in the trenches, somebody working with big direct response companies as a copywriter and somebody that's making six figures, this is going to be something for you. So when we come back after a quick snippet of music, it's going to be Ian Stanley talking to you.
For the past 18 months or so, I've been working with one of the biggest direct response websites in the personal finance space as pretty much there were only three of us there. I was the only copywriter. And I just left that, or I'm in the process of leaving that now to go work with Crisis Education, which is one of the biggest direct response, basically, companies online right now. With the, you know, they're just like crazy ad spend on Google and just insane amounts of volume. Got like the 4 foot farm and that stuff. So
what's the 4 foot farm for people that don't know?
That's it's an offer that pretty much teaches you how to build a garden in a 4 by 4 foot space. And it's the self-reliance market pretty much. I didn't write that ad, but they pretty much just test, you know, a bunch of different offers, but that's really the go-to moneymaker as of now. And we're moving into some new markets right now. I just wrote a real intense, like the most intense sales letter I've ever written for something else, for some fluoride stuff. And so it's like, for the same company. Okay. So the guy who's been the lead copywriter there is actually leaving at the end of December. And so I'll be taking over as the head copywriter there. So I've decided to go more of the, this is technically going to be my first time really being an employee. So I've been doing this as a contractor. So I'll actually be employed and I'll be moving to Austin, Texas in March, but I'll still just be going in the office, you know, a couple of days a week, not like a 9 to 5 where I'd kill myself. So, but yeah, sort of taking a different route than what we all think at the beginning. You know,
yeah,
working for 2 hours in the morning and then going out to the beach, which I actually do a lot here.
Well, so let's talk about that for a second. So you have been a freelance copywriter, that has been basically your title, right, over the last 18 months?
I mean, I've been pretty much full-time as, like, technically a consultant, but pretty much full-time with the company I've been with.
And that's for the last 18 months?
Yeah, in the personal finance space.
And you were just essentially just writing copy, correct?
Yeah, I got pretty lucky. I sort of got the copywriter's dream in the sense that I really don't know much technically. I'm pretty retarded that way. So I was pretty clear about that up front. And he was originally going to hire just one person to do a bunch of different stuff. He ended up hiring me and one other guy, and I just pretty much put text files. I just write stuff in a raw text file and put it in a Dropbox folder, and then the other guy inputs all the emails, he does all the coding and, you know, design and everything like that. So I'm just purely writing copy. So I get to do what I'm best at, as far as I'm not wasting time, you know, sort of, I don't have to wear many hats. you know, I just write copy, but I've been doing that for them. And then I was working a bit with a dating business, you know, like a sort of a pickup type thing.
And information then, based stuff.
Yeah. Info-based, some bootcamp stuff, but, the main product guy sort of went off the deep end a bit. And just, you know, that's the biggest thing I've learned through all this stuff is that there's big bottlenecks that you'll find within a business. You know, the products that he has in the dating niche are by far the best, in my opinion, just way different than everything else. But when you get people that are perfectionists, it's just really hard to get stuff done. So you can write the best copy in the world, have the greatest products, and if you don't get them in front of people and get stuff recorded and finished, it just sort of sits there. So done that, worked on my own stuff a bit, and then, but primarily I've really been working on as a consultant with them until I started talking to the crisis guys. And now I've, you know, just over the past month and a half, I've already written 4 or 5 new sales letters, in, you know, four different, you know, from Ebola to, you know, fluoride and crit, you know, shit like that.
So basically just taking the Ebola angle and pitching a product. So leading with Ebola and then turning it into some sort of information-based product for protecting yourself or something like that?
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, pretty much just, I hate to say capitalizing off Ebola. but, you know, you see a gap in the market. And that's the crazy thing about all this is you realize that there are people who are genuinely scared of this issue. And by, you know, selling them something, it's you're providing them with actual relief to their problem. And I actually really enjoyed that. That letter was pretty fun. It was pretty scary, actually, because I had to read the product.
The product was scary, probably?
Well, the product was like, you know, how to prepare for Ebola. And I'm like, holy shit, Ebola can last for 48 hours on surfaces. And I took this hook of, like, I called them, like, the hot zones. It's basically these like, specific areas you're supposed to avoid with that. And it was a kind of cool thing. I showed it to some friends. I have like a list of my friends that I write to, and I was like, hey, if you guys ever wondered what I do, this is it. And everybody who watched it was like, what are the hot zones? What are the hot zones? And so it's kind of cool to write copy and have people actually just like, what was that? Like a good enough secret that, you know, they're genuinely intrigued.
Now I know you're living in San Diego, and now you said you're going to be moving to Austin, and, you know, your schedule might change up. But what's your lifestyle been like over these last, I don't know, 18 months or however long? What's a typical day like for you starting from waking up and going forward?
Yeah. When I started doing this, I was still teaching tennis like 10, 15 hours a week. So I would pretty much get up early.
Put on your whites.
Yeah.
Is that what they call them? I don't know.
And go, no, definitely not. That is so stereotypical. But I did teach, like, you know, 40-year-old hot housewives married to ridiculously rich guys that, you know, were coming to get their tennis lessons. So that was very stereotypical. When I really want to get, I used to wake up at 5:30 every morning, and I'd write from 5:30 to 8 or 6 to 8 because I just knew for myself that in those 2 hours I'd get more done than the rest of the day. So if I really want to get stuff done, I do that. But I used to, so I was working a lot, but I was, you know, enjoying it and doing that. But nowadays, doing this stuff full time, lately I get up at 7 or 8. I'll read for a bit. I put on the bulletproof coffee. I foam roll for a couple minutes, dunk my head under the cold water, and then I meditate for 10 minutes, and, like, I'm ready to go.
What's your meditation like? I've been curious about this because I keep hearing this popping up again and again. And I've just been curious what people's meditations are like.
It fascinates the hell out of me too, yeah. And I've always, I've had periods of time where I've done it a lot, and I, without any doubt, my life is better when I meditate. So it's sort of, you're like, why the hell don't you just always do it? I do, now I actually listen to it. It was a podcast of Tim Ferriss and Tony Robbins, and he talked about, he called it priming. So I'll pretty much, I sit down, I pop on some binaural beats. So I just go on YouTube and type in binaural beats focus. And I put that on and then I sit down. I just breathe for like 30 seconds, really relax. And then I just do a gratitude thing. I just give thanks for 3 things. I start off with something really basic, like being happy that I can breathe. I actually couldn't breathe out of one nostril for a while. So I just like happy on that, you know, whatever parents, whatever good stuff you got going on. Then I relax for, do like some chi energy meditation for like 5 minutes. And then I just do affirmations, which for me right now, like whatever your focus is, for me, it's like monetary goals, like saying things like, you know, I make $100,000 a year. I make $8,500 a month. I make $274 a day. And just really indoctrinating my mind with those ideas. And whenever I do that stuff, I find that it's just like, I've had really weird shit happen. Like the next day after I start doing that, I was walking in a hotel and found $40 on the ground. Like weird woo-woo shit. Mm-hmm. But I've found that that just helps a lot, just because no matter what you've done, even if you, you know, if you've gone out drinking, if you're hungover, if you're tired, like that just sort of wakes you up and gets you in that state. But honestly, the biggest thing for me with writing, with really getting going on like a good routine, is I hand copy. I still do it. You know, I when I was getting started, I did it an hour a day. And nowadays, I'll notice a difference in my day's productivity if I don't do it. But I like to do 15 to 25 minutes in the morning, just because sometimes, you know, you're not quite ready to write. Mm-hmm. And I'll just start hand copying.
Okay, so you wake up in the morning around 5:30, kind of go through, you know, these meditations and whatever else, the coffee and the...
Back then, when I do 5:30, I'm pretty much just like, I just jump into writing. I just force myself to start writing.
Okay.
That's what I do if I really need, even now, like if I have a deadline on some copy I want to get done. That's one thing, people think deadlines are bad. Deadlines are the greatest thing in the world. You don't get shit done without them. But if I really have to do them, I'll get up at 5:30 and I'll write. Nowadays, though, it is more of, you know, 7 or 8, and I sort of ease in and just try and get 2 to 3 hours of, you know, good writing in a day.
Okay.
But yeah, when I'm doing that, I do the Pomodoro method. So I just do 25 minutes on my timer. I've done the Gene Schwartz thing, doing 33 minutes. I just, 25 is a bit easier. So I work for 25, 5 minutes, I'll stretch or foam roll or do something. And then, I'll do that for about 2 hours. But for the first one, a lot of the time I'll hand copy. So I'll either find sales letters that, I like at the time, something that like really hooked me in. I'm like, why did this work so well? When I study a new funnel, like we built out a survey funnel, after going through Ryan Levesque's training and, to learn that funnel, I just found other businesses and I would go on there and I'd hand copy the opt-in, I'd hand copy the sales pages and their emails and all that stuff just to really get a feel for it. And it's just, you always get ideas. Like I find it really hard not to walk away from, a lot of time I'll start hand copying and then I'll get an idea and I just stop where I am and just start writing.
Yeah, that's really cool that you can then take that, just the copy, just the words that you've written, and then just hand that off to somebody else. And they kind of handle the technical stuff.
Yeah, it's a game changer. I mean, that was actually one of the biggest frustrations with the company I've been with, is just how long it took everything. Like, I remember it took 2 weeks to write like a full on like 3x John Benson style VSL, and I was real excited to test it, and it's just sat there in Dropbox for 6 months, just unused because I didn't want to record a voiceover. You know, just some mental block. Whereas when I started with Crisis, I wrote this thing on the energy, like energy hacks, and within, you know, a week there was already a video, a VSL totally recorded with animated with everything done and tested. And that's a huge difference because, you know, it's not you that's in the way. It's crazy what happens with the production.
So are you coming up with these ideas? So are you saying, okay, I've been through Ryan's survey funnel formula or John's program, and I want to try something, and then you talk to whoever you're working for and be like, I'm going to write this, and they're like, cool. Or how does that work? What's that process normally been like for you?
Yeah, that depends. So with the other one, we had already, I think before I started, he had tried sort of a survey opt-in, not like based, you know, just sort of after seeing some, not after, he hadn't gone through, you know, Ryan's actual training. So we all had that idea, you know, let's do this. We went through Ryan's training. The thing about that is it's really difficult. It's so hard to implement. It just takes, like, it took us 5 months, you know, and that's, you know, figuring out the questions. But as far as like that, was more their idea. You know, with stuff now, with crisis, it'll be like, if I have an idea, if I think that there's some, you know, because some of the stuff's going to be, have a short shelf life. You know, something like Ebola, if that had taken off, would have only run for a month or two. But, you know, you make a few hundred thousand or a million or something in that time span, it's worth it. But pretty much, you know, it's whoever has an idea within the business, if it's a good one, we go for it. But that's so the coolest thing about this as a copywriter is his view is pretty much if you have an idea that you really are behind and you really think will work and I don't agree with it, like if he doesn't agree with it, he'll still let you do it. Cause you know, you never know. Nobody knows really what's going to work. You know, that's what you learn is no matter how much you learn about all this stuff, you can never predict 100% that something's going to be successful. So yeah, if I come up with an idea, I mean, I pretty much for all the emails I was writing for the, in the personal finance space, all those are just my ideas. There's nobody checking anything. There's no like somebody looking over your shoulder and, you know, editing your copy. It's just like, what, you know, what can I come up with? What angles can you think of?
Okay. So you do your writing in the morning and then from there, you know, and I know, like I said, I know it's going to change when you move to this new company, but what was your evening, afternoon like?
So, yeah, I pretty much, like I said, I try to get the 2 hours of good writing in. I, you know, you can really get a lot done with that. I read a lot. I feel like that's really one of the most important things you can do as a copywriter. I mean, pretty much all of our most profitable emails have come from one sentence or two sentences within a book. And, you know, taking that and turning that into a correlation email, you know, these email, you know, you're taking this commonly held knowledge and then comparing it to your product. And, so I'll read, I like to just, you know, get outside. Sometimes I'll just go to the beach or, I go to the gym at about three or four. So once I go to the gym, I'm done. Like I really don't work after 3 or 4. Once a nighttime hits, that's pretty rare for me. Other than like the very odd, like whiskey fueled writing session.
Got it.
It's pretty much, I mean, so it depends on those days when I'm up really early, you're really done. Like by 8:30, you know, 8 o'clock, you've written some, you know, you'll have written a bunch and you don't really need to write more. So you can either edit stuff or, you know, a lot of it, like I said, as a copywriter is really just your ideas come from the life you live, the things you read, what you expose yourself to. So everything you watch or read or every conversation you have with people is a potential big idea and a, you know, a hook that you can take to your writing. So the most important part is just having a really good schedule for getting your writing done. You know, you can't work for 8 hours a day as a writer in the traditional sense. It's just not going to happen. And you're doing yourself a disservice if you do that anyway. You know, I know you ride your bike, you know, get outside and, you know, you go do stuff like that. And that's really when stuff clicks.
Definitely. What kind of books are you reading during this? Is it, you know, topic specific stuff, or is it just maybe copywriting business in general, or is it something else?
No, I tend to these days, I don't read too much copy stuff. I mean, you get to a certain point where you're like, what's this really going to do? You know, what am I really going to learn from this that's going to, you know, blow it? Because it's just sort of an exercise in procrastination. Sometimes you find yourself reading because you're like, oh, if I get this new tactic down or some shit, you know. But if you know how to sell, you know how to sell. I'll reread Great Leads a bit because I like to just try and really cement that in my brain. But I mainly read a lot of nonfiction. I read a lot about the brain, habits, learning, just, God, I just read a book 2 days ago called The 5 Love Languages. You know, I read a book right before that, Play It Away. I'm reading Tony Robbins' new book. I've never read any of his stuff, but he just came out with a finance book. I was reading some finance stuff because you get like an idea. So sometimes it helps to read stuff that is related loosely because you can get some sort of, you know, just some little idea that comes from that. And you've got, you know, a few email ideas or you get a big, you know, something for copy. A lot of it's on the mind for me because that's what I'm interested in.
Awesome.
I'm trying to, yeah, that would be right now. That's definitely been my kick. It used to be a lot of, you know, military stuff or business or, you know, self-help, I guess, yeah. If you actually, yeah, I mean, realistically, yeah, yeah. It is self-help stuff.
So let's go all the way back then, because it sounds like you've come a long way in at least in the last 18 months. And, you know, go all the way back to the very beginning. What were you doing when you first discovered maybe marketing or copywriting or business in general? You know, how did you get into this world?
So I think the first thing I ever did, I was a sophomore in college and I read something on affiliate marketing, and I think I read a product on it or something as how to grow taller. And, I'm like, you know,
yeah, you're a tall guy. Yeah.
I'm like a little under 6'2", but my dad's 6'4". And so my whole life growing up, it's, you gotta be big, you gotta be big, you gotta be big. It's like the fucking most important thing in the world to him. And so despite the fact that I'm tall, I had, you know, there's always been that wanting to be the tallest I saw. So I was like, oh, I'm sure people will buy this. And I remember reading something that said, I thought it got a 50% conversion rate. Right. And I thought that was totally normal. I'm like, oh, half the people that click on this stuff buy it. And, so I think I spent like $17 or something like that. And I don't think anything happened. And I don't even remember. That was the first foray. And then I got into, then it pretty much just became buying ClickBank products. I never got into the Warrior Forum, thankfully, but,
how did you find that first product then?
God, you know what? I think it was I bought Herbalife, as painful as that is to say. I was very naive. I'm still naive in the sense that I like to just believe in things. But I spent like $400 on them. I think my mom had given, for some reason, I had $4,000. And to me, that was a fucking fortune. And so I was like, let's make more money of this. I was living in a mobile home by myself.
Where?
Near Santa Cruz in Aptos.
Okay.
I had transferred from SMU in Texas, and I had one quarter that I had to wait to go into Santa Cruz. So I was living in this mobile home with my girlfriend, was a few hours away, and I was just spent most of my time inside of this place, just online or whatever. It's a weird time.
So this it's an is awesome story, though.
Yeah, it's pretty, like, I lived next to this 400-pound woman named Ape.
Wow. It's probably not awesome in the moment.
Like,
but
no hair. And I slept on the couch, I'd say, for 3 months, almost every night.
Why do stories like this exist with, like, it seems like a higher population of copywriters and marketers have these weird-ass stories than any other population of people?
I believe it. I haven't even thought about this in so long. It's funny how vivid it is, too, because this is really when I, like, first learned about it. Remember, then I did, like, sports betting, and I was doing all, you know, looking into all this stuff, just trying to really make money. Funny enough, I made a good bit of money doing that at one point, but, so that was really, and then I started buying, you know, I found out what ClickBank was from that. And then you just start buying ClickBank products. Cause at the time you don't realize it's the best copywriters in the world are writing these fucking, you know, totally lying to you. And there were no guidelines back then. This is 2009. So I would just buy products and then I wouldn't do anything that was in them. And then I'd return them cause I knew how to call ClickBank. And then I bought Jordan Hall's product, and I spent like $300 on the coaching, which was a big deal for me. And I ended up writing my own dating book. So this is now my junior year of college. And he told me, we're talking on the phone, he's like, oh, well, you know, get opt-ins and then get this autoresponder madness. You'll get 4 times the conversions. So I'm like, okay. So I bought autoresponder madness. And that's when I consider that my marketing education actually began. And then he turned, you know, Andre turned me on to Peter Spapin. And then, you know, I was learning from them. The first money I actually made was writing emails for people. I wrote some sequences for him. I wrote some sequences for another marketer.
For Jordan Hall?
For Jordan Hall. Okay. And then a guy, Alan Sultanic, they paid me, you know, at the time it seemed like a big sum of money. I remember I was in Brazil for a month and I wrote like some sequences for them that took me, you know, a couple of days, and I made like $1,000.
Wow. So did you reach out to them? What was that process like? Because I think the people that are going to be listening to this are going to be pretty interested in that, you know, and the first client there.
Yeah, that was, so pretty much I had met Jordan through, you know, buying his coaching, but he had I think he had a product that he was coming out with, and they were giving away done-for-you email sequences as an upsell. So I wrote these sequences. They were like 15-day sequences. Some of them were like sort of, I created sort of a template as time went on, and some of them were pretty basic, and some of them were better.
So you just used what you knew inside of Autoresponder Madness.
Yeah, I pretty much was using, I pretty much took the Autoresponder Madness stuff and just ran with that. That was really like, for me, that's definitely why I am where I am. Because I pretty much just said, look, I just sort of felt a connection with the email stuff and copy. I didn't even know it was cold copy at the time. And I just said, hey, you know, I can write these sequences for you. And they paid me like, you know, it was like maybe $50 a sequence or something crazy like that. Like it wasn't a lot of money, because, you know, for 15 emails. But at the time I'd get them done pretty quickly. It wasn't like I would write them now. Like I would not have been proud of those now, but I made, you know, say 500 from one and $600 from the other. And they were in random niches and stuff like that. I'd really focus on the first 3 to 5 emails. I'd write good stuff. And then it'd be sort of more like, hey, here's this video. You haven't watched it yet or something like that. But it was a really, so Jordan sort of just referred me to Alan. And then I started talking to Alan. And then I really didn't do much consulting work from then on out. I tried to build my own stuff for the most part. I was trying to sell my dating book, and I got tiny little businesses with Andre. And I actually posted an ad in there. I just said, hey, I'll either go over your copy and help you improve it for $25, or write you a pre-sale for $100. And got a couple of people taking me up on that. Just that was within the forum there.
Mm-hmm.
And then
these are good lessons. I think you're kind of, you know,
yeah, I mean, the biggest
here.
Thing is yeah. like, I was just taking whatever opportunity possible. Cause you know, you're trying to make money from your own products and from ClickBank stuff. And by spending money on traffic, even though you're scared shitless, every time you lose $50, you think the world's going to end, and you don't realize that the guys that are making it are willing to lose 15,000 before they break even. You know, and so just getting money from it was cool. And it was just sitting on my computer writing some stuff. And so I did that. And then I actually, after college, I was doing this sales job, working 50 hours a week, driving 10 hours. And I was actually doing well at it, but I just, you know, I couldn't stand how it worked. And so I quit. I was teaching tennis, and so I was like, all right, I'm going to build my own stuff. And I did a Craigslist search for just marketing stuff. I was just looking around for marketing stuff. And then I found, it said something about an email marketing position open in this, company that did SEO for people. But this was like you know, 20 minutes from my hometown, in California where my parents lived. And I would drive to the office, and I was working 25 hours a week, but I got the job, by just applying on Craigslist. They sold SEO services through telemarketing, and they wanted somebody to do email stuff. And when you go in, this is what's so crazy about learning how to write email copy, is nobody has a fucking clue what they're doing. Like, they just, nobody understands email. And so if you go in and you sound even mildly educated on the topic, they just want to hire you. And so I was getting like $18 an hour, which, you know, every time I got out of college, I had friends working for, you know, $10, $12 an hour doing shit they hated, you know, on top of teaching tennis for good money. And so I was like, okay. And I didn't really end up liking the business, but I did that for a few months. But I honestly, like, that's my biggest tip on getting work doing that stuff is, like, if you know email copy, like, copy's great, but it's one-off and, you know, it's tougher, but the email stuff, there's really no business in the world that can't benefit from email. And there are very few that are doing it well. So I just went in and I was like, oh yeah, you should be dripping content, you know, and you should be talking to them in a more, you know, like more of a conversational tone. It's weird because people are like, what are you talking about? This is a business. You have to be professional. You have to do all this. And, you know, that was really my first step in actually getting paid to do this. And then after that, I responded to an ad, and not an ad, it was an email in the Tiny Little Businesses for a job with Steve Gray working in Texas. And I decided, I was like, you know what, I'm willing to go be an employee. It was for quite good money. So I applied, and I ended up making it to the final two people. And I don't know how. I think my best skill is convincing people I'm better than I am at shit. But I pretty much, with no experience, I had sold my own dating product and actually turned a bit of a profit, actually as an affiliate. And then, so I had some experience, you know, doing that whole thing, but that was it. And I'm talking like, you know, $25 a day of traffic. And so I got to the final two that had some, you know, 40-year-old guy who had been in it for 10 years, so I didn't feel too bad. But during that time, the recruiter put me in contact with the people I worked with last, or the guy who owned the business. It was pretty much just him working on the business. He had another one, and he hired me full-time to do this. But we started talking because I took this opportunity, you know, that I saw this email, and I guarantee there were hundreds of people who saw that and thought, oh, maybe I could do it, but I'm not going to respond. And so I decided, fuck it, why not? And it just led into this totally other thing, which, you know, meant me working from my laptop, you know, making a full-time living and getting profit sharing and going from, you know, pretty much, and, you know, I can't even count the amount of times my parents said, when are you going to get a real job? When are you going to, you know, quit? And I'd say never, because this is what I'm going to do. So I got to give them the finger.
So you were building your skills basically through application is what it sounded like. And I guess around that time you probably were doing a lot of reading and studying other courses that you get your hands on. You said you bought Autoresponder Madness and Tiny Little Businesses. So you were a little bit of trial by fire and a little bit of, you know, actually studying and the education stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, I essentially would spend maybe money I didn't, not that I didn't have, but that I maybe had no right to be spending. Like I joined Ben Settle's email players, while I was working with that company doing their email marketing. I mean, and I was like one of the only people in their office who actually had my own office. I was only there part time. I'd watch Netflix during the day at times because I would do my own stuff because it was such a joke. Like it was just a joke. And that's why, you know, I got over and I started doing it from home and I just was like, I don't like this business. So I stopped. But I mean, I got email players and I, you know, because he didn't have a guarantee. And I think that was the first product I'd ever bought without a guarantee. And I was like, well, I'm obviously going to read this book. Mm-hmm. And so I went through that. That was really good. And to be honest, that stuff works better than Autoresponder Madness is really, really tough to make work these days.
It is. It's a little, it's high level or.
Yeah. And yeah, I throw in open strategy. Loops. Yeah. I throw in open loops when they make sense and like stuff like that. But, that's what I really think of with Andre is, you know, it's open loops, nested loops. But for the most part, I mean, I've found these correlation emails to be the most helpful, the best ones, but, yeah, at that time, really, I just kept on working without reward was what it came down to. The big thing, honestly, the big turning point, and I know this just sounds like me plugging the shit out of your product, but I had heard maybe like a year or two before, you know, about hand copying stuff. And I was like, oh, that sounds really, you know, cool. And of course, I never did it. And I think about a month before I started, before I applied with Mike at my last, you know, what I've been doing for the past 18 months, I had only one real goal for each day, and that was to hand copy for an hour. That was like the basis of whether or not my day was worthwhile or not was that. So I'd get up and I would hand copy. And like I remember my best friend home, he'd be like, did you do copy out today? And he didn't even, you know, he's not even in the business. Like if I was like, no, he's like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. Like that's what you're doing. So, but I pretty much, I did do it every day. And that was also part of how I got it with Mike, because I was like, yeah, I mean, if you tell somebody that you've been hand copying sales letters for an hour every day for the last month, it says something about you and your dedication.
Yeah, maybe I should have a little badge or seal I can give people that they can show to employers.
Yeah, there should be like a vetting process. Like, you know, you have to send them pictures of, you know, you're the reason that I have so many legal pads. I have flipping like, I can look around my room right now and see like six.
Yeah. I'm kind of contributing to the usage of way too much paper. I don't know how to get over that, but yeah.
There is something about writing on paper. And I think I told you this is I write my sales letters actually by hand now.
Yeah. Let's talk about your process a little bit. And and your process for writing copy, because I know that you're doing a lot of kind of video sales letters, and then also let's talk about email too. I don't know if there's any differences or similarities.
Yeah, there definitely are, actually. I've been mainly writing email for the past, you know, a lot of email for the past, you know, year and a half. But this past little while here, I've been writing crazy amounts of copy. You know, I've probably written more copy in the past month and a half than most people have ever written, just because I've had the opportunity to write new sales letters. And for the most part, I'd get a deadline, or I'd set my deadline really short. Like, I'd give myself 2 days. I essentially had 2 days to write the Ebola, the energy. And so I'd get the ebook, I'd read the ebook, and I would, I'd read it, and then I'd try and just let it all simmer in my brain. Then I'd sort of skim through it again, just trying to really get the product and maybe write down a couple things that sometimes I'll use note cards, or I just have a legal pad, and just so I can see what big idea pops into my head. And sometimes you're just screwed. You just don't have anything. That's what happened to me with the Ebola thing. I was like, I have no idea what I'm going to do. And I'm going to do this, turn this in tomorrow.
Wait, did they give you the Ebola hook, or was the book about Ebola, like, specifically?
It's just like how to prepare or survive an Ebola crisis. So I just read the book. Okay. There's no hook. There's no anything get, you know. It's just, here's an ebook. We're going to sell it. Write something. Okay. And so my big hook was these hot zones. And I actually think we need to move them up in the copy if we were to retest it, but it's sort of a moot point now. But so this, what I do is I just start, cause it's so easy to just not start because you're like, I can't think of anything. And I started writing and I was like, this is awful. You know, what's wrong with me? This is, you know, that's sort of what you're thinking. And then after a page, suddenly I sort of reset, I wrote a new headline, and then I just wrote 4 pages of copy in, you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and had a full sales letter that I really didn't edit. I had to, with that one, I will say some of the times you do that, you're going to have to edit your sequencing a bit because you just put shit in the wrong spots. But if all else fails, I just start writing. You'll be amazed at what's in your brain. If you've hand copied a bunch of sales letters and you've read a bunch of different things, your brain's just full of information in your subconscious. So that's something I'll do for that. Sometimes,
do you have to get into your customers? Like, do you do research on that, or at a certain point, I guess you get to a point where you know them inside and out, but
no, see, that's the big difference. That's why something like Autoresponder Madness can work so well for Andre is, you know, when he talks to us as internet marketers, you're like, wow, he's speaking to me. You're like, I've returned products. I've looked for this. I've done that. You can know your market inside and out in a hyper-focused niche, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference between writing mass markets is your skills have to get a lot fucking better.
So how deep do you go? Not
have, dude, you're not even, you can't go that deep.
So is it like, I'm talking to men between the ages of 20 and 45, or are you even broader than that?
Not even really that, dude. Like, well, so, I mean, if you think about a mass consumer niche, you know, so something like credit, you've got every person over the age of 18 has a credit score. And the people that have bad ones, you know, you're writing to the 35-year-old businessman who, you know, fucked it up for some reason. And you're writing to the, 57-year-old divorcee with 2 college-age kids who's barely, you know, scraping by working 2 jobs. So how do you find commonalities between them? You really don't. I mean, you just have to, that's why even when copywriters talk about, you know, you got to know your market better than anything. Like, it's true, but there's only, when you're writing for a mass market trying to get huge volume, you can't really know that much. So you're really relying on finding a really good hook, or a really good big idea, or educating people through a process and understanding something new.
So you're more just understanding the product and the industry, really, is what it comes down to, and then going from there.
Yeah, and that's why, like, with dating, dude, I can write a full sales letter in 45 minutes that I know is going to sell something, you know, because I know the market, you know what pain points hit guys, and you know, like, what their issues are, and you know how smart, you know, you're writing to you know, say you pick a, you know, that's something that makes writing so much easier. You pick one person in your brain and you write to them, right? Like if I'm writing to it in a certain niche, I can think of my roommate or something, if he, you know, as like the face. Or like when I did some stuff for like, I wrote like a skincare offer and, you know, and think I've got my mom in my mind, you know, that's where you're thinking of. But for a lot of these things, there's only, for these big mass market things, you can't get that deep. But I would say if you're in a niche that's small enough, I mean, yeah, you can have sales letters write themselves by just knowing everything about them.
That's really valuable, interesting information, because you don't hear a lot of people talk about it.
Well, it's because most people don't have any experience in a big niche. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's so much easier selling. Like, and that's why, you know, as a takeaway for anybody that is in a smaller niche, like if you learn how to write good copy and, you know, good emails and stuff in a smaller niche, you can just crush it, because you can get people. I mean, when you're writing,
it's an 80-20 thing almost, right? I mean,
yeah, completely. I mean, you're getting the people in a niche that are passionate. Think about, even, you know, golf is a big niche, but those people are fucking passionate. You know, they already spend money. They've proven to spend money. And they want to learn about golf every day, so they'll open emails about it. When it's something like, you know, like personal finance topics that people don't want to hear about as it is, they're already in debt, they don't have money, they're scared, and they don't want to think about their problems. And it's not a passion-driven niche. You don't get people who are like, oh, man, I can't wait to learn more about debt today. You know, it's not something you wake up excited for. So if you can learn how to write to them and keep them engaged, you know, you can kick the shit out of a niche that has, that's really passion driven. Like, you know, I wake up and I want to learn about marketing more or copy, you know, and I'm driven to do that. And so there are certain people's emails who I'm going to read every single one, you know, and there's a handful of them. It's very few people these days. But that's, yeah, I mean, so for the copywriting process, I'm really just, honestly, I'm just trying to find a big idea. I'm just trying to get my hook, because the lead is so important.
What's the lead to you? How do you define lead, just for anybody that might not be familiar?
So for me, the lead is going to be, I mean, your headline is a part of the lead. But I'm thinking more about the big idea of the lead. How am I taking them down that slippery slope? What's my first sentence? How am I getting them to just grab them by the balls and read, you know, like, so my lead is either, you know, whether it's a secret, whether it's a story. I'm just trying to, and that's what's hard. I'm trying to find a formula for finding big ideas, you know? And I think that's what it comes down to, is your subconscious comes up with them. You can't really consciously, you know, your brain's not smart enough consciously to come up with shit like that.
That's interesting. So the lead's just, to you, it's just kind of the first part before you introduce
let's
the
say
product,
the first,
or,
you know, 500 to 800 words.
Okay.
Something like that. Maybe 300 if it's shorter. But I mean, stuff like what we do with ours is we actually have a template to finish copy, which makes life 10 times easier, because you write, pretty much I'll write a lead and 12 bullets. And I love bullets. Bullets are like my thing for some reason. You know, I just like writing bullets. And I think
Do your bullets follow the product or follow the lead or the big idea that you're talking about? So in other words, are you talking about the feature benefits when you're talking
actually,
about a bullet, or
that's something I didn't think of. That's probably the most useful thing I can say, is that when you're going through an info product, you read it that first time, and then the second time you read it, write bullets as you read. So I'll write, so for the first energy lead I wrote, I only had to do 12 bullets, but I wrote about 40. Because as I was going through and reading this I'm just getting these ideas, you know, and then you whittle down all the ones that you don't like. But those bullets just become part of your subconscious, and maybe that bullet is a headline or it's your big idea. Like with the Ebola stuff, you know, the hot zones was just something I had in a bullet or two. And then I'm like, as I started writing, I saw that become, I actually looked at 80-20 and I was like, how can I think about, you know, an epidemic in an 80-20 mindset? And I was like, oh, like these, you know, these little areas only account for 1% of the U.S. land, but they have the potential to spread 99%. So, but it's those bullets that give me the ideas sometimes for leads. So I sort of start backwards. If I don't, unless I jump into something and just have my like hook ready, then I'll read the product and write bullets as I go.
Okay.
And that's the best way to do it.
I mean, the typical way that a lot of people describe bullets is outside of the formatting thing of it. It's mainly just you list a feature and then talk about the benefit of that feature. You know what I mean?
For
bullets. But you're, it sounds like you just go through and kind of bullet out your ideas.
No, I'm talking like. Real bullets. I'm talking the bullets I'm actually writing.
Okay, okay.
These are like, you know, bullets that are going to go into the copy. So it could be.
They don't have to. Bullets. Do they have to be bullets in your like sales message, or are they? Do some of these bullets become paragraphs?
These are pretty much. Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it is these are the bullets that'll go into sales copy. Get rid of the ones I don't like, but I don't judge them as I write them.
I see.
You know, if I write 40 and some of them are, you know, it looks like a kindergartner put it together, you go, who cares? You know, and you cross it out or whatever, but a lot of the ideas will come from that. But for bullets, for me, I'm really looking at how can I make this, like, really boring thing seem really fucking interesting to the point where, you know, it's like people talk about, they read that one bullet and it keeps them up at night. And I think that happened when I ended up buying email players from Ben. Like, I remember just reading his bullets. Like, I'd been to a sales page like 3 or 4 times, and I was like, what is the subject line that always gets opens no matter what, you know? That's where my mind was at the time. And I was like, I have to know. Like, I have to buy the product just because I need to know what that is. And, you know, that's the skill of good bullets as you go through a product. And, you know, like the hot zones, it's like some – I almost don't want to say it because I'm curious if people, if anybody listens, will be like, what are the hot zones? but you know, stuff like when I'm writing a book, I'm just taking, you take something really ridiculously boring and make it seem really sexy and interesting.
What are a couple of neologisms? Okay.
Sorry?
Yeah. So yeah, that was my exact next question. So what kind of things do you do to make something that's boring sexy?
So like say writing an email on, you know, the three parts of the money mind, which to me is actually fascinating. You've got, you know, your lizard brain, you've got your human brain and your monkey brain essentially. And so you can relate that to how your brain actually works compared to money or anything. But I put, I think one subject line is, you know, the three parts of the money mind. For me, I'm like, oh, for me, that's interesting. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But we tested that against, you know, three others. And the one that just destroyed them is the secret brain weapon, you know, hacks your mental mind, your money mind, or something like that, you know, brain weapon creates money or something, you know, something like that. Or I've done, you know, I took one email and put like how to get paid to breathe, you know, and that one, I enjoyed that one. and you have other things you think is like Michael Jackson's investing secret and some other, you know, something basic, and how to get paid to breathe beats them badly. But all I took was, it was, you know, direct, it's drips or dividend reinvestment plans, super boring, you know, nothing sexy, but you turn it into something exciting by saying how to get paid to breathe. And you're not lying, you know, technically, if you do that stuff and you make money with it, you can just sleep and make money. So yeah, the neologisms, that's sort of where all the subconscious kicks in, you know, what have you read? What does your mind have built up in experiences?
Interesting.
And neologism, okay. For, you know, if anybody doesn't know what that is, it's just a, it's essentially a made up phrase for something that already exists, or just giving a phrase, a made up phrase to something that you created, whether that's a system or, you know, an acronym for something or whatever that may be. But like brain weapon, you know, is just like, that's just an idea you get from you know, what you've written there.
And so you start with the lead is what it sounds like, and trying to find that one big idea. Or do you start with bullets?
Unless I really have a lead already in my brain, I'm starting with bullets.
Okay, so
I'm
going to
go through that product so that I know the product really well.
Got it. So you start with bullets, then you're trying to come up with that lead, and you do. Say you find your hook or whatever.
And if you
else.
Don't have anything, like I said, I just write.
You just start writing.
You don't judge it at all. You do not care how bad what you're writing is. It's generally a lot better than you think. I really don't edit much at all. But there are times I'll look at something or I'll be writing and I'm like, Ian, you shouldn't do this for a living. You're terrible at this. You know, and even like, yeah. I'll say the more you get into copy, and I talk to Lance, a guy who's been writing for Crisis, and I was like, do you ever start writing and just think, I have no fucking idea what I'm doing? And he's like, yep.
Yeah.
You know, it happens. But,
yeah, so are you doing that by hand in the beginning and then you transfer to computer or just yeah. keep walking us through your process if you don't mind?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll do bullets. I'll take my bullets and flesh them out into whatever, you know, and then I just start writing. Sometimes those bullets maybe are a headline or whatever. I start writing, I write my whole lead, and then I finish when I transition into the bullets where it says, here's some of what you'll learn inside the product or whatever. And then comes the close, which, like I said, we use like a templated sort of close now if it's these, you know, $7 tripwires.
Can you explain what a tripwire is really fast?
Yeah, so Tripwire is just a low price front end product to get people through the door. It gets people through the door, but it also serves the purpose of showing that these people are willing to exchange money in order for something. So even if it's only $7, they've proven to you that they're willing to get a credit card out of their wallet and buy something. So a list of 200,000 buyers can be worth a lot more than a list of a million people who've opted in for some other reason, you know. And it's a much different mindset if you're going straight for a sale than an opt-in, but you've guaranteed a much higher quality in your list.
So have you been mainly dealing with the front end stuff like that, the tripwire type
now,
products?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, but we just. And I don't know. I don't know how much I can really talk about the thing I've just done.
Well, yeah, you don't have to.
It's not kicking off yet. But I'll say I've just done my first ever physical product, and something that's not just like, I guess, like, here's a guitar. Like, when you strum it, it makes music. Like, yeah, that's not hard to sell. You know, you go, why is this guitar great? Done. But I wrote a close for this thing, and the other guy wrote the lead, and it converted real well, lots of money to the email list, and then you try it on the front end and it just tanks. And so you learn that, like, writing for a physical product and something that you have to prove, it's like doing an infomercial, right? You're not just proving that there's a problem here and that there's a solution. You also have to prove that the solution even works, you know, which is a totally different beast altogether. And so, like, that's just a whole different process. But then you're putting in upsells and I mean, I do a lot of funnel stuff too. Like, what's the best upsell here? And you know, generally that's going to be, speed and automation. You know, how can you learn this quicker or how can it be done for you?
Hmm. Okay. So with your close, is there a process that you have for that or is it just kind of the template that they gave you, and you don't necessarily have to reveal their template because
That works well because it's just it does a really good you know it does a great job of explaining why you're offering something for that price because it's tough to offer something at a lower price because you essentially have to say you know why is it this cheap if it's that good you know why are you offering it for this much whatever but for a close my goal more than anything is not persuasion, it's clarity. Like, beyond every other part of, you know, in general, that's what I'm about. But with the close, all I'm really trying to do is say, here's what you're getting. Here's how much it costs. Here's how you get it. Here's what you'll get. And I use the phrase, you know, here's this a lot and stuff. Because that's something when I first started writing copy and I didn't know what copy was. You know, I remember I just feel like, click the button below. And you don't realize that other people haven't bought a lot of online products and they're wondering, is my order secure? Is it a digital product? Is it something that I'm going to receive am I becoming a member? Is it an ebook? Are you sending me something in the mail? You know, and there are all these questions still in their head that they may have bought, but because none of that's explained, they won't. So
do you have a checklist for all that stuff?
I don't know if I have a checklist. I could
probably just kind of a mental thing in your.
It's just mental. I'm really just thinking: have I hit everything that they're getting? Is it really clear? Sometimes what you do is you take it to somebody who doesn't know what you're offering, and you go read that. Do you know what I'm giving you? That's one of the best ways to do it: is take somebody who doesn't know what the hell you're doing or the product is or anything, and say, "Do you know what you're receiving in that?"
That's really cool.
I mean, you're going to do your things like your price comparisons. If you can find good price comparisons, do that. If you want to beat people not on price comparison, if you want to, you know, position because of other stuff, talk about how valuable your own time is, you know, and compare it in that way. You know, things like if you're selling a product based on value over price, you're going to want to say, you know, to hire me personally, if I can do it, it's going to cost you $5,000 just for an hour. And, you know, that's just to get you started. Whereas you can get all my knowledge for $97, you know, especially if that's a real value. That's a comparison, but you'll go through comparison stuff. And then, like I said, the real thing I'm focused on is hitting, do they know what they're getting? Is it very clear what they're getting? And am I making a compelling reason for them to click the button and buy it, in the sense of like, what are your other options? You know, if you've been doing this for 5 years and you're still where you are, what's going to change if you don't change it now? Something to kick them in the balls and say, take some action.
Got it. So I know you work a ton with email, and you are just running kind of ridiculously large split tests that nobody would have the opportunity to, or most marketers and copywriters will not have the opportunity to work with the numbers that you've been working with. So what's your email process like? Because I know you've been writing a lot of emails too.
Yeah. We've, you know, had a list of what 1.2 million people, which is, you know, pretty insane. Especially when, you know, before that I'd been writing, you know, maybe the most was a couple thousand or something, or even, you know, a few hundred at times. So it's a lot different. And you're really, it's, like I said, this is mass market stuff. So my process there is really, it depends on what I'm doing. If I'm doing an autoresponder, I'm thinking, how can I educate them on everything they need to know in order to make the sale, while making it, you know, keeping them hooked in and trying to really build a relationship so that they're long-term. And then as far as, you know, blast emails goes, the, you know, four times a week or daily type stuff, we write a lot to blog posts. So I'm just taking whatever it is that I'm writing to, and just really the big thing I learned in that stuff is, you know, the two big types of email you're going to write, one of them is either going to go to, you're making the sale more through the email, whether it's your own product or a product that people have seen a good bit, or the sales page isn't great, you know, then you really sell through the email. And then the other one is, you know, if you're just trying to get clicks, if you're trying to send them to a really high converting VSL, stuff like that, you're really going to think more about building curiosity for the click and selling that click. So that was a huge thing for me, is I used to solve whatever you clicked on the subject line for, you would learn within the email. So you had no reason to click. So once I learned how to, I would reveal the subject line or the open with the click. You had to click to find out, you know? But for that, as far as a process goes for email, those ones are more straightforward. The real thing I do are these correlation emails, where I'm taking, you know, the subject that people understand or that you can make understood, and then comparing it to your product. And without fail, those things outsell like everything.
That's interesting.
And so for me, that's where the reading really comes into play. Cause if I just get this one idea, I just write it down, put it somewhere, and then I'll sit down and write it into an email. I just take the concept, say for one of them, I got into this show Combat Rescue on Netflix. I end up watching like 6 episodes in like, you know, a day or two or something. And I'm like, God damn it, I should be working, I should be doing stuff. But I'm like, all right, how can I make this worthwhile? And as I'm watching it, I'm getting these ideas. I'm like, oh, I can compare this to how you would, you know, like they've got a very specific process for how they do it and how they train them into learning how to do combat rescue. There's an exact, like, you've got there's a golden hour, and then there's like one of the, there's the exact step-by-step thing. So I'm like, how can I compare that to whatever the topic is? I mean, and that's the crazy thing about these is you can use them in any niche. I could write a dating one saying, you know, there's a, you know, in dating, it's not a golden hour, it's the golden 5 minutes. You know, everything you say in the first 5 minutes sets the tone for the rest of the relationship you have with that girl. So if you don't know how to deal with that, then you might as well, you know, not do it at all. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, I haven't written that. I just was thinking that now, but it just shows like,
yeah, you know, can how match up the,
yeah.
Yeah.
And so those ones, yeah, the process there is really just like finding, and that's what I'm working on now, is finding a system for big idea generation of correlation emails. One of the best ways is using news, you know, anything, if you're writing daily or blast type emails, just think of what's popular, what's on everybody's mind already, pop that into a subject line and then write an email about it.
What's the best way to watch the news without having to watch the news?
Oh, I don't watch the news. Just to be clear about this, I stopped. I don't think I ever watched the news. I think I read the 4-Hour Work Week when I was young, and I did not. I'm also too happy a person. Every time you turn on the news, it's like, this guy died, or little kid gets beat up. And you're like, I actually want to start a site that's just called Amazing News, and there's just one great news story a day. You just start off your day, and you're like, wow, people are actually cool.
And you'll get 5 to 6 people to visit your website.
Like, oh, another kid saved from AIDS. Like, boring, okay? I'm getting over all this fucking positive energy. So without watching the news, when I was writing these, the issue is that I stopped writing these ones because we want to take a blast email and put it back into an autoresponder as an evergreen email.
Okay.
But I think it's totally worth using newsworthy emails. I would go to a site called alltop.com. It has a bunch of headlines. You can go to something like Reddit if you have self-control. I've never been a Redditor. I think it's terrible for your brain, but, you go go see what's popular. And really, like, if you're somebody who doesn't watch the news, like me, if you know about it, like if I know about something, I know it's really big because I've heard about it.
Yeah. I have a buddy who watches the news, and I don't know if this is embarrassing or this is going to date this interview or whatever else, but he was the one that told me about Ebola, like, and I had no clue, and he started making all these Ebola jokes, and I was like, what are you talking about, man? Like, why Ebola, like, all over again?
Yeah. You know, like, dude, it's true. I really am a firm believer of the whole fuck the news, like, you know, let other people tell you.
Yeah.
And if you're cool about it, like, people, you know, it's like, people, well, how can you just watch the news? How can you be so ignorant? What's wrong? And I'm like, well, guess what? We're having a conversation right now. You can tell me.
Yeah.
And then I don't have to listen to how boring you are. You know,
that's how to win friends and influence people,
yeah,
right there.
Exactly. Actually, in a weird way, it is, because if you polarize and, you know, if you're straightforward about things, people actually tend to like you a lot more, or they hate you, which is, you know, where I fall into the category of make a decision.
Yeah.
So for me, that's actually something I need to all be getting into now that I'm going to be going transitioning full time to Crisis, really in this next couple weeks here.
Because it seems like that might be driven.
Yeah, because I mean, one idea can be worth, you know, I mean, really the goal there, and that's what shifts your perspective, is working with businesses that are driving crazy volume, is, you know, they don't want an idea that's going to bring $2 million over its life. They want 10 million. You know, that's the goal, is something that does 10 million a year. Mm-hmm. And that shifts your perspective on what you think is possible, as well as what you start to aim for. For me, that's something I need to do, is I need to introduce, some form of news into my life to get a constant flow of, you know, ideas like that. Like something like, you know, I wrote one on the Olympics, I wrote one on, you know, Facebook when they bought WhatsApp. It's amazing what you can start to find, especially if you practice this as a drill. Like if you start to practice how to write these, it's amazing what you can come up with. Like, you just take the littlest thing. I mean, honestly, when Miley Cyrus was everywhere, you could have written an email about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now, Taylor Swift, whatever you want to, you know, shake it off.
The shake weight people are going nuts right now.
So the news stuff, that is something that's a harder topic. But I would say find a couple of these sites that sort of aggregate news. Alltop is one of them. I said Alltop. I mean, you can go to Reddit. I'm trying to remember, there are a couple others that I use, but you can, you know, just type in fucking news aggregate. And whatever's big on headlines is going to be something you can use. I mean, I recommend reading a lot. Just for all of your life, there's really nothing more beneficial than reading. And then if you really want to learn something, hand copy it. You know,
awesome. Yeah,
we talked about that for other stuff. You know, like anything. For me, if there was something I want to learn, like I've been doing comedy, you know, there's going to come a time I'm going to start hand copying what people have said. You know, just stuff that people have, either a book that's funny or, you know, stand up stuff mainly. You know, I said my girlfriend wanted to write a children's book, and I was the first thing that popped in my head. I was like, you should find the top 10 best selling children's books of all time and hand copy every one of them.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of authors that have done it, an entire book, you know?
Yeah. I started doing Reacher for a bit when I was really at like my peak of doing this stuff. Cause I wanted to just be, I was like, how can I get really good at storytelling? So I would take some of Reacher's smaller books. I didn't get through any. I did a few days. But you learn a lot from, there's just no better way to learn this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that nice little plug for Caviar. But, you know, we could talk about email, and we're going to talk about email, you and I, more, but let's move forward and close this out. Cause we're getting up
past
an hour here.
So keep talking.
So what's next? You know, where do you think all this is headed for you? I know that you're going to be working for this big company writing. Is that just kind of your main focus and you're going to see how that goes, or, you know, what does the future hold for you?
Yeah. So, for me, this will be sort of the primary focus, just, you know, new offers and writing a ton of copy. There's just no better way to learn. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I view it, is this is sort of, it's almost traditional and non-traditional at the same time as a route. You know, I could go the freelance route and, you know, do well and do that, but I don't think there's a better way to truly learn all of this than to go and work with one of the big people, one of the big dogs. And it's really just, you know, it'll just be me writing copy, and there's really only 5 people or so that are really in the business. So it's still small, and you get a lot of freedom. So for me, that's definitely, really grow that as much as possible, since I have incentive to do so. But then for me as well, there's, you know, one thing I haven't done over the past year and a half that I'm sure a lot of people can relate to is I really haven't built my own business. I've worked on stuff here and there. I've had a few, you know, sites that have made a little bit of money that I just then stopped working on, and which is retarded, because what I've found out, if I want to say one thing that I've learned that most people don't know, is that if you keep emailing people, they will buy stuff. Like, I'm talking about people who've been on a list for 2 years and have only seen one offer for 2 years and they buy 2 years later, or writing a 90-day autoresponder. People buy. And yet I have lists that have stopped at 15 days, you know, and they just sit there and they turned a bit of profit. But if I'd put 90 days in there, you make money. Yeah. But so for me, yeah, the other goal is to build something of my own, just putting 30 minutes to an hour, of focused work towards something of your own. Nobody can take that away from you. It's something that lasts forever. And the skills and the experiences you get can't be taken away. So that's my biggest thing over the next year, is building, you know, putting some time into myself and investing in not just knowledge and experience, which I've been investing in, but actually having something to show for it. And like I said, that only takes, you know, 30 minutes a day, an hour a day, you can really do something.